One side is pretty. One side is ugly. We know which side to pick. It's the one that smells like Seattle spirit.
You get the best weed.
Call 911 and the police.
I assume it was not a cop, dog.
Amazon is ISIS.
Say exactly what you think.
No attack! No attack!
As a city, we have no plan.
So, doing show prep on Sunday and reading about the protests in Portland. I have to do an intervention. And it's not just for us, it's for them. Dear King 5, Como News, and Q13, you guys are harming yourselves in the following way. Without knowing it, by buying into an AP narrative about what went on in Portland, you are harming yourself, you are harming the news business, you are contributing, and you are greatly contributing to the perception of fake news. You don't know this. I don't think this is intentional. I think that you simply don't have the facts and you don't have enough independence to be able to report correctly on things like this in Portland. Now, maybe you didn't send reporters down. Maybe you're legitimately relying upon the AP. If so, you need to have some editors in this position because it's West Coast. It's Portland's just down the street. It's basically Seattle, but maybe a tiny bit crazier because I think the homeless there actually get paid a bounty when they smack somebody. And we're not quite to that stage here yet in Seattle. I know that it's okay to stand outside that that famous donut shop there and threaten to beat up little kids. I watched that go on. So Portland's maybe a little further down into the hole than Seattle, but it's West Coast. So there was a commonality to this reporting. That the same phrase, the same naming technique that went in each of these stories. And you heard the reports.
They issued a dispersal order at NATO in Colombia, specifically saying disperse the intersection of NATO and Colombia.
You mean going west, right?
The crowd then moved a full block west, and they continued to fire impact munitions at the crowd, openly fire rubber bullets, rapid-firing rubber bullets at the crowd, when at that time everyone had complied with that order. Because that order was to... I was on the sidewalk observing. Everyone had left the intersection that they were telling the crowd to disperse. A block plus away from that intersection, the police were still firing flashbang grenades, firing rapid-firing rubber bullets at the crowd, even though the crowd had complied with the order that they gave.
So here's how this is reported on King 5 News. They said a police used flashbangs at right-wing rally that drew counter-protesters. All right, let's start here. Does the Patriot Prayer Group, do they describe themselves as a right-wing group? Maybe they do. I know Antifa describes themselves as anti-fascist, which is laughable. Here's how King 5 writes the story up, and again, AP involved in this. A right-wing rally in downtown Portland Saturday that drew a large group of counter-protesters and self-described anti-fascists. So question to you, King 5, here's how you're harming yourself. My listeners are smart enough to look at this and see, oh, I see. So Antifa gets to self-describe. They get to be, their self-described title is anti-fascist. The Patriot Prayer Group, I don't think they say we're a right-wing group. In fact, I think that they describe themselves far differently than that. Now, secondly, you attach no ideology at all to Antifa. None. Well, they have an ideology. They're leftists. So you have to understand, you maybe can't see this because you're snowblind with ideology. Q13 went the same exact route. Q13 also went to the self-described anti-fascist. Now, again, I understand some of this comes from AP copy, but this is an important regional story, and you should have someone on top of this because you are contributing to the fake news perception. Folks like me read this, and we also notice something else. You don't discuss the fact that Antifa is a government-designated domestic terror group. And the Q13 piece, they went a long way to discuss the controversies around Patriot Prayer. Not a mention of the controversies around Antifa. like hitting people with bike chains, like attacking people with spears, like in Seattle, having an advertised an event to teach people how to build weapons to attack cops, how to build an improvised explosive devices. None of that is mentioned. But they're just self-described anti-fascists. At Portland, the K2 there, Lachey Wesley, spoke with an Antifa member.
For the most part, right-wing Patriot Prayer supporters and counter-protesters stayed...
There we go. Right-wing Patriot Prayer supporters and counter-protesters. No ideology.
...on opposite sides of NATO Parkway today. But at several points, we saw officers deploy flashbangs and other non-lethal measures.
This happened when Patriot Prayer demonstrators were starting to march. There were hundreds.
Okay, this happened. What happened? We can see on TV that flashbangs are going off. It didn't happen. See, it's a passive voice you're using. And K2, by the way, is a Cuomo affiliate, or related to Cuomo, I guess. It didn't happen. It didn't break out. Someone did it. Okay, there's a genesis to this, and my audience gets that. I don't think the AP wants to ascribe ownership over these actions.
Of counter-protesters out here, we heard police use flashbangs and pepper spray and tear gas to break up the crowd. They had to do that several times as counter-protesters moved throughout downtown Portland.
Doing what? Counter-protesters with no ideology but allowed to be self-described anti-fascist were doing what?
But those protesters continue to follow people who were there for the Patriot Prayer event. One woman told me she wasn't leaving until they did.
As long as there is going to continue to be people putting people down or speaking hateful things or not being inclusive or being xenophobic, I'm going to be there saying, don't talk like that. Don't speak to people like that. Don't treat my neighbors like that.
Great. So you're going to be down there deciding what you don't want people saying. And that should be okay because you're tolerant. You are the very measure of tolerance, right? And she appeared to be an Antifa member, which, of course, we're not going to mention. The media. King 5, Cuomo, Q13, you guys are harming yourself. You may not see it immediately in ratings. But my respect for you lessens when this happens, and deeply lessens. And I can tell you, I give you guys more leeway because I work in the media, but my audience is done. And I'm not kidding when I say I will come by and show you, and I'll show you instances your teams are not aware of. In fact, I bet you I could come by and surprise your reporting staff on the degree of bias that exists. You know, this past weekend, the same time Antifa members went and smashed in windows of a U.S. Marine Corps recruiting station during a protest. That's nonpartisan, right? No ideology?
At least 20 people are behind bars this morning after violent clashes erupt between two groups of protesters in Berkeley. As you can see, police arriving in riot gear as the far-right No to Marxism rally was countered by the far-right
No to Marxism rally, at least.
Left, stop the hate rally.
The far left is labeled. Who did that? Fox News. Fox News is more fair and more balanced than Q13, Cuomo, and King 5 on this issue. You probably heard this, but Candace Owens, the young African-American woman who may be the most important person in this election. I've got some news on the president's approval rating with African-Americans in just a minute. She and Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA were having breakfast in Philadelphia when... So we're all clear. That's Antifa again, this time screaming at an African-American woman and a white man and yelling at racist cops. Oh, yeah, the cops who were trying to get Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk out of that circumstance. They were black and Hispanic. They were also told that they're racist. But there's no ideology with Antifa. They're just self-described anti-fascists. We'll come back, get into the live world of breaking news on a national front, including these approval ratings for the president from African-American voters. No, I'm not going to scream because it just about blew up my voice just before I came on the air. We got a very, very busy day. I'm going to have an exclusive interview with an old friend My second ever producer in radio, believe it or not, Boyd Rogers, is a successful attorney. He's practiced in front of the judge who's hearing the Manafort case, and Boyd is going to tell us what it's like to practice in front of that judge. I love this judge. I think he's brilliant. 78 years old, sharp as the sharpest knife in the drawer. So that's coming up in just under 10 minutes. Right now, we'll check the breaking news on a national front.
As we speak, the Todd Herman Show is live and local because the power seekers never rest. And political news is breaking as we speak.
Sleepy Jay Inslee got himself on the TV. And can you guess the topic that Sleepy Jay Inslee wanted to address to a national audience? No, I think he kept himself away from talking about weed this time. Maybe reined himself in because he said it 50 times on Bill Maher's show.
We have the best weed in the United States.
Yeah, it's big, Jay. Let's start with some substantive breaking news. Probably hasn't made it through the haze of everybody obsessed on Trump's tweet. By the way, later in the show, this isn't the first time Trump has said that the meeting was about gathering political information on Hillary Clinton. Just so you know, it's the first time he said it on Twitter, but it is not the first time he said it. There's no new news there, in other words. Rasmussen. The support for Trump on a job approval basis. And you know what this is? This is people figuring out, okay, there's Trump the tweeter, there's Trump the guy who speaks at rallies, then there's Trump who signs legislation and governs. People are starting to see, I see, I got it, all right. What are we seeing for African Americans? Black voters, their support for his job has doubled. 15% to 29%. If that trend continues, Democrats are in real trouble. Because they've been able to take for granted the black vote forever. So black unemployment's at an all-time low. And do you think black people are, say, immune to being upset with media coverage or noticing that it's skewed? No. Do you think black people automatically want open borders? No. Black people are not a monolith. So the job approval rating is way up, which makes it puzzling to me to see Marco Rubio decide that it's time to go full on big government. This is such a disaster coming. Rubio, the last time he blew it, he went into business with Chuckie Schumer on, quote, immigration reform. Chuckie Schumer told him, oh, yeah, we're going to have all sorts of enforcement. Don't worry about it, Marco. I'm going to take care of you. Then, of course, he hung him out to dry. So Rubio is out now acting, in my judgment, like a big government stooge. He wants to have paid family leave. Okay, that exists now. I think you can use your Social Security for this now. They're changing it so you can dip further into your Social Security so you can pay yourself to take time off when you have kids. Here's the thing that Marco Rubio just is either ignoring. It can't be that he doesn't know, because Marco Rubio is a very smart man. Once you start this, it never ends. It won't end at paid family leave. It will be, oh, we can use this to pay for college. We can use this to pay for school. We can use this to pay for anything. And the Social Security system is, at this point, a Ponzi scheme. It truly is. People are taking out far more than they pay in. It's not the recipient's fault. People have been forced to pay into this. Entitlements never shrink. They always, always grow. Lastly, on a national basis, before we get a little bit of Sleepy Jay Inslee getting himself on the TV, did you guess the topic yet that Sleepy Jay Inslee went on the TV to address? Anyone guess it? The Parkland shooter in Florida, they broke the law. They denied him access to special needs care that he was first removed from, and then he asked to get back in. They said, no, it broke the law. Remember, this is the same school district who refused to put him into discipline referral for jail, given what he had done, or for mental health care, given what he'd done. Why? Because they were seeking federal reward monies set up by Eric Holder and Barack Obama to not put kids like him in the legal system. Lastly, Sleepy Jay Inslee woke from a nap. A staff member came and said, hey, you're going on the TV. So he has a national television audience. And what does... Pardon me. What does Sleepy Jay Inslee say?
Rescue America, and we will rescue America from the grasp of an unhinged narcissist.
An unhinged narcissist, you say, Jay? What did you find it important to tell the media about yourself?
Well, I'm a doodler.
Oh, okay. Anything else you decided to say?
We're getting these absurd ideas that what we want is our first graders to have a Glock on their hip.
And your greatest hit?
We got the best weed in the United States.
Yeah, we'll have more of Sleepy Jay Inslee getting himself on the TV. We come back on the Todd Herman Show. Big day in the Manafort trial. Rick Gates testified, said, yep, I broke all sorts of laws working for Manafort. Me, I'm no fan of Gates. I'm no fan of Manafort. But this judge has already said, this isn't about Manafort. You don't care about Manafort. You want to get to Trump. He said that in public. So what's it like to practice in front of a judge who will flat slap you? My good friend and my second ever radio producer, who's now a very successful lawyer, Boyd Rogers, joins us next to talk about what it's like to practice in front of this judge. Oh, yeah, there's a special reason for this. My good friend Boyd Rogers joins us. He has practiced in front of the judge who is hearing the Paul Manafort case. He's also from Utah. I'm not mistaken, Boyd, you went to BYU, did you not?
I did not. I'm a University of Utah man.
Well, see, now I'm all screwed up. Well, so then I've just assaulted your ears with the BYU fight song. my apologies.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So it's so funny to talk to my second ever radio producer, and you're now a successful attorney, and you practiced in front of this judge, T.S. Ellis, the third, by the way. I've fallen in love with this guy. Very direct. He keeps his courtroom in order. He's been all over the government that it's not illegal to be rich, and you really just want Trump. I know why you're here, but he's also been over Manafort's lawyer. I mean, this guy is not shy. So what was it like to practice in front of this judge?
He is, Todd, exactly as you described. He is the kind of judge that you both want to get because of his inherent fairness and his equal treatment of everybody, but he's also the kind of judge you don't want to get because he's extremely active on the bench. He does not sit in a chair all the time. He stands up, he walks around, he paces, he's listening to everything, and his mind is going a million miles an hour. He's extraordinarily bright.
Yeah, 78 years old and still issuing orders. Like today, he told the media, he said to the media, look, you guys, I'm going to kick you out of here, because they had learned that Rick Gates, who was Manafort's business partner, was going to testify, and he did indeed testify. But then he decided, he told the media, who shuffled out of the room and sprinted out of the room to report that, he's castigated them. He's been all over everybody. So did he get in your face, Boyd?
a couple of times. It's very difficult sometimes when you're being told what you should and shouldn't do, and when you're trying to advocate for your client, and the judge is looking at you and grilling at you and sort of looking down from above with these steely eyes, to not kind of roll your eyes or slump your shoulders or sigh.
He came at you for body language as well.
Well, he had done something, and if I recall correctly, we had been arguing a matter for about an hour.
Yeah.
And he had asked us to take a break and come back and continue the argument after lunch, which I think meant for me just a personal inconvenience that I needed to change a return flight back home. And so I kind of turned to my partner who was there with me and kind of slumped my shoulders and maybe shook my head a little bit. And he said, is something wrong, Mr. Rogers? And I said, excuse me, Your Honor. And he said, well, you seem to have rolled your eyes and slumped your shoulders and maybe shook your head a little bit there. And I said, no, Judge, I just was thinking of something else. And I don't remember exactly how I handled it now, but I did not want him to think that I was upset or angry with the court in any way, shape, or form. But he was very attentive to those kinds of things, and he interprets those things as disrespect for, you know, not only for himself, but to his credit for the proceeding and for the court itself. So I do give him that credit. It's not a personal thing for him entirely. It is also for the formality and dignity and respect of the court.
And you know, this is what I've been thrilled with, is that I can't tell what side he favors. He said in the Manafort case, he's going to settle it faster than people thought. He told Manafort, you may be facing life in prison. He told the government, hey, guess what? You're not going to make the collusion bar unless you get Gates to testify. So if he pleads the fifth, your case is done. I mean, he's just flat out direct them. So I guess since you practice in front of the judge, are you watching the case?
I have been trying to pay attention to it. You know, yeah. I do have a full-time day job, so yeah. I try to catch up with some of the clips at the end of the day and get a few blurbs here and there. But Todd, what you describe actually is really an ideal kind of judge. You don't want the judge to be tipping the balance in favor of one side or the other. In fact, I would get grilled by the judge with very good questions when I was arguing in front of him, and then it was a relief to sit down and see that the judge would grill the other side's lawyer just as deeply as he had grilled me. But I have to tell you that without fail, and I probably was before Judge Ellis, I want to say probably three times in person and maybe once by the phone, but at the conclusion of every argument, he always said, you know, counselors, thank you very much for your preparation. I appreciate your well-thought-out arguments. I appreciate having you here today. You were well-prepared, and your arguments were well-presented, and the court will take it under advisement. So he's also very much a gentleman. And so I think the government and the defense should actually be very pleased, despite the back and forth and the sparring that goes on, to have Judge Ellis there presiding over this trial.
You're saying that he doesn't take things personally, but you're describing something here also that he's walking around. He's not standing behind or not sitting behind the bench. He's totally engaged. As an attorney, I know that puts psychic pressure on you, but does it put case preparation pressure on you? Are you guys trained to try to match a judge? You know, because like in sales and presentation, we're trained in a way to sort of mirror people, try to adopt, you know, something about them so they feel comfortable around you. Do you guys get that sort of training? And does it change, for instance, how the Manafort people would have prepared for this, knowing the judge's style is, I think, rather distinct?
I think that once they knew from the assignment of the case that they had Judge Ellis, that they definitely, if they were smart, and I presume that both sides are smart, they would have definitely prepared more in depth and prepared for that level of energy that the judge brings to the courtroom. I had the opportunity to watch the judge in action both before and after various arguments that I had in front of him, and he is high energy. He delivers the same sort of energy level to every matter before him. And I have to say that nothing even seemed routine to him ever, despite the vast number of very routine matters that a district judge would have. He always was at that same energy level. So yes, you do try to match that energy level. You do want to be engaged. You want to make eye contact. You want to get the sense when he tilts his head to one side or the other that he has a question, and to answer that question directly and on point and be ready to go with them. But you also have to be ready to not back down just because the judge is pressing you, because sometimes that's the game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
He wants to know that you are ready to give back to him sort of the same amount that he's dishing out to you.
Oh, really?
See where your strengths are and how much you really believe in what you're arguing.
Oh, really? So he's actually testing, are you just lawyering or do you really believe your guy's innocent or guilty?
You know, I would say that I was only before him in civil matters. I do not practice criminal law, but I think I don't know that any of the lawyers themselves on this case are being tested to that degree, whether they really believe in innocence or guilt when they're going back and forth on some of the routine argument matters. But obviously, if you were to ask them gut reaction, everything they do is because they believe that the government either can prove its case or cannot prove its case.
So a question about juries with a judge like this in Ellis. He has gone after, I think it's the government, and if I'm not mistaken, Boyd Rogers is with me. He's a successful attorney, was my second ever producer in radio, smart enough to go get into the law and practice and raise his family. And Boyd, when the judge is going after one of the sides for facial expressions, does that have an effect on the jury? Do they then start to now really concentrate on the facial expressions of the principles of the attorneys when the judge is calling them out. I would assume if I saw the judge calling them out, I'd want to say, hey, you know what? He's doing that facial thing again. Is he trying to sway me?
Well, you know, this is something that I don't know that we always get from newspaper reports or from even media reports, because there are no cameras inside the courtroom. Most of the time, if the judge is arguing with an attorney, it is outside the presence of the jury. Mm. And so judges, particularly a seasoned judge like Judge Ellis, is not going to get into a back and forth, especially a heated back and forth, with an attorney with the jury in the room. And in fact, some of that is taken care of before the trial begins in the day or at a break. And it's almost staged in a way to ensure that the attorneys are going to toe the line, if you will, in the presence of the jury. And the attorneys are trained to make sure that when the jury is in the room, they are on their absolute 110-cent best when the jurors are there. If that does happen when the jury is in the room, certainly the jurors are going to pick up on that. But I also tell you that the jurors are instructed prior to the trial beginning that they are to assess every single witness for credibility, and they are to pay attention to the witness and only the witness. And so most of the time, their attention is going to be directed at how the witness is sitting, whether the witness answers questions directly, whether the witness is fidgeting, whether the witness doesn't look like they're lying, or how credible they present themselves. So I don't know that it really has much of an impact if they're even present when this back and forth is taking place with the attorneys and Judge Ellis.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on. There's very few people who've heard the inside of dealing with this this Judge Ellis, and I appreciate you coming on. What a weird thing all these years later to have you back on the radio and me on the radio and all our lives in between. And God bless you and take care of your family. It's just so kind of you to come in or come on, and I appreciate you very much, Boyd.
My pleasure, Todd. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, sounds good. Todd Herman Show will continue with just a few more things. A quick arrangement of news-like items laid out into an audio feng shui mode, starting off with the brilliant minds of Sarah Jeong, the racist New York Times editorial board member. Kamala Harris, the racist who says it's not a bad thing to be a racist. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM, and we roll into
just a few more.
Where we take a series of news-like items, lay them out into an attractive audio feng shui mode, and then present them to you in a neatly numbered list.
String one.
So you remember Sarah Jeong? She is the racist who tweeted over a four-year period, well over 200 times, her hatred for white people. Twice in those series of tweets, she explained she'd like to see the genocide of white people. She is on and will remain on, apparently, the New York Times editorial board. So I thought it'd be interesting to hear Sarah Jeong's brilliant observations. Certainly there's no non-racist Asian women who know tech who could be on their editorial board, are there?
Everything is implicitly organized around how men see the world, and not just men, how white men see the world, and this is a problem. This is why so many things suck.
That's why you're on the editorial board, huh? That's why someone like you, who spews racist hatred, is unfireable. All oriented around white men, is it? You are a nonsense human being with no depth. Next up, in just a few more things.
Thing two.
Kamala Harris is running for president of the United States. She just got into the Senate, but what's to stop her? That's what Barack Obama did. She is also someone who practices racial division on a daily basis just to maintain political power. And now she's at the far left Netroots phenomena with the leftists who make the politicians come in and beg to have their support, explaining that she says she has a problem with the phrase identity politics.
I have a problem, guys, with that phrase identity politics. Because let's be clear, when people say that, it's a pejorative. That phrase is used to divide and it is used to distract.
No, you, by the way, please pick her to run. Have you ever heard a more annoying live speaking voice? I mean, I'm losing my voice today. But that, please pick her. No, it's not the words identity politics that's used to divide people, Kamala Harris. It's identity politics. Dividing Americans up into every subspecies of Americans and then auctioning off your favor as our rulers is what divides Americans, Kamala Harris. It's not the word identity politics. It's the activity of identity politics. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing three.
So this woman, Therese Akaumo, she's a Congolese immigrant. So she chose to move here. She chooses apparently to live in New York City. She's the lady who climbed up on the Statue of Liberty. And for whatever reason, they decided to shut down the entire island, including blocking people from their one time chance in the lifetime to go see the Statue of Liberty. They should have just let her sit there unnoticed and she would have gone away. She gave a little speech outside of a New York court this weekend. And she's a woman who's been impressed by identity politics.
This administration is an abomination. On the other end, I took a giant step on Independence Day to put a spotlight on the crimes committed against migrant children. America! America!
America! America!
Oh, sorry. Was that Kamala Harris? Sounds very similar in speaking style.
I have a problem, guys.
Huh. Have you ever seen them in the same room at once? Next up, just a few more things.
Thing four.
Trevor Noah, a comedian, decided to tell all of us who are conservative that there's really no such thing as socialism. You know,
maybe like, socialism is what that is. Well, I don't like socialism. It's all in your mind. It's like you'll go like, wow, that person's good looking. And you're like, that's your cousin.
Because conservatives are, I'm marrying their cousins. Socialism's all in your mind. You should go down to Venezuela. And when someone is trying to chase down an alley cat in order to eat it or feed it to its kid or their kid, you could just go to them and be all glib and socialism's all in your mind. Noah. Oh, Trevor. Next up, just a few more things.
Thing five.
I gotta have a cleanser. So much to get cynical about. How about a good feel-good story out of the city of Yakima? He's okay. The homeowner's okay. Guy crashed his house into, crashed his car into a house.
When they tried to pull him over, they say the car continued speeding down D Street. Reports say the car eventually crashed through a fence on North 9th Street, then into an abandoned house. Police arrested only on 10th Street as he tried to run away. Apparently, police say he told them he had to poop, and aside from that, that his car didn't have any brakes, so he couldn't pull over.
So was it that you needed to go to number two, or that the brakes didn't work, because the two are not necessarily related? We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. More local news as one thing or the other is going on. Guess what the smack daddy Dow Constantine's focus is?